knowing that usually most kids, their nutrient intake will balance out over a couple days. So sometimes parents are like, well, I can't really like sit back because all they're eating is carbs. But usually if you give them like 3 days, they will balance that out as long as you're giving them opportunities to have other foods. You're not only serving carbs. So we can usually like relax a little bit.
Join my community to join the conversation. And if you don't want to join my community, you get access to these weekly sessions where you get to ask your very own questions and get access to one-on-one coaching. If you just want one-on-one coaching by itself, standalone, just want some quick questions to be answered, whether you're a parent, teacher, nanny, whatever, message me on Instagram, TikTok, and we'll work something out.
What's my name? What's my name? What's
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to people who can help you on your parenting journey. Today, I have Casey Barnes, also known as Mama Knows Nutrition, on Instagram, and she's got her own website too. I really love her posts. We connected maybe about a month ago through we were kind of in the same space and same group of people collaborating on some Instagram reels. And that's when I really started to dive into her stuff and just had to have her on the podcast, and knew that a lot of people would benefit from her being on the podcast. So she's here, and I will let her introduce herself as I have a tendency of doing. So go ahead, Casey, let tell us about yourself.
Well, hey there. So I am Mama Knows Nutrition on Instagram. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and a mom of two. My son is almost six and my daughter is three. So I go through all the same parenting struggles and picky eater struggles too. So picky eating, toddler nutrition, that's really my sweet spot. I help parents feed their little ones and I try to make it be less stressful, just really simple. Like, I don't like to overcomplicate things. Parenting is hard enough. So, I try to just give people the good stuff and help them with those problems they have and do it. So, I have my website. I do some one-on-one counseling, some small group picky eating stuff. And yeah, that's
Cool.
me.
Great. Great. Thank you for coming on and talking to us. I'm going to jump right into it, and start with an exchange in the private Facebook group that I have when I was, talking about this almost, I think it was about a month ago, kind of when we planned this. And just so everyone out there knows, those who are in the, chat right now, know that like if you want to ask a question, I will unlock, just let me know on the side, in the little comment box, and then I will unlock it so that you can pop on the video, ask your question, and we can have a really good conversation about whatever you're struggling with. But I'm gonna go to something that was to the exchange, the conversation that I had that I just thought it was really great, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate. And so I'm going to try to really read it the way that I think that what's typed.
Yes.
So we'll see how it goes. I kind of asked a question, tell me about your picky eating stories. Tell me about your struggles because Casey's going to come on and I want us to know what we're struggling with before. So one of the community members started off saying, "My son used to gobble up anything I set in front of him. Broccoli was a frequent request. Everyone watched and swooned at the notion. He just eats whatever I give him. I don't even know where this kid came from. I hate broccoli." Cue grandparents giving him chocolate every time they came to visit after his second birthday. Imagine this. You're sleeping soundly next to your toddler and husband. You feel a gentle hand on your cheek and a tiny nose press up against yours as his morning breath carries his first words of the day. "Mommy, I want chocolate," followed by a full day of repeated requests. So I gotta switch of repeated requests until you end up hating chocolate and sugar altogether because there's nothing more enticing to a three-year-old than a sugar rush to feel the insanity and chaos coursing through your body. I hate candy. I hate that everyone who wants to show up for my kids insists that candy is the most special experience of childhood. And then another community member came in and said, same here. My daughter was a fantastic eater. Peas, loved them. Veggies, her favorite. It was wonderful. Then her grandmother introduced ice cream. It's been an uphill battle ever since. She won't touch anything she's used to. She's surviving on a handful of fruit, crackers, carrots, and peanut butter. I try so hard to get her to try things she's used to eat, but she won't touch a thing. And they go on. There's more exchange, but I think that's enough to kind of start with. And in that context, too, talking about how do we, you know, one, create healthy habits, and then two, maybe even undo some healthy habits. Maybe we're just now deciding that, like, realizing how important nutrition is for children and for ourselves. And so we're trying to make a change, or we're trying to change habits. Or maybe it's like in, you know, the comments, it's a grandmother, or maybe you're a nanny or someone else who has introduced maybe some unhealthy habits. Now, how do we handle that?
Okay. So there's so many things that I could touch on there. And the first thing that I want to say is I know so many parents relate to this of like, babies usually are amazing eaters. They will eat anything. You can give them, you know, sardines, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Babies will go for it. And then sometime between ages 1 and 2, that really shifts for most children. So part of it is their age, and that they developmentally start becoming more scared of new things, new foods. And I think we don't really know why, but a lot of researchers think just a long time ago, children had, once they started being able to go away from their mother, they had to be, you're frozen.
Oh, well, you're good. Continue.
Okay, I was worried. Okay, so babies or little kids being able to leave their mom and have to be careful about what they put in their mouth because it could be dangerous to them. So that's kind of where we think it might come from. Whatever the reason, that is normal at that age. The other thing too is when we start trying things like chocolate, like ice cream, those taste so good. And you can like those so easily on the first try. Other foods take a lot longer to learn to like. So we're really fighting this battle with what is available and what is frequently given to children, even at daycares, at preschools, at friends' houses, with grandparents. It's that stuff that tastes really good. It's like, you know, food scientists work on this stuff to make it taste better than what our earth can grow. So I think we, one, cannot blame our children for falling into really liking that stuff. Yeah. But so in terms of healthy habits, what I like to tell parents is like, think about what you do most of the time. That's what's going to matter the most, is the all, most of the time, not all of the time. So when, and if grandparents are a frequent thing in your life, like if you're seeing them really frequently, you may need to have a conversation with them about what you want them to be feeding your child or not. But like, if you can incorporate fruits or veggies at each meal during the day, like, you're doing amazing. If you can think about those whole grains, like, that's awesome. It's not that we have to micromanage every single thing that they put into their mouth, because that also can become a problem if we get like too nuts about it. So really having that balance, like, I think dietitians, we are just notorious for talking about balance, but it really is the key. You know, you can't be too extreme either way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love like what you said. You know, developmentally, they're changing, and one of the other things too is that they are really defining a self-concept of like who they are, and like understanding that like I am my own unique being who has my own likes or dislikes, and they're exploring that and they're trying to figure that out. So that kind of plays into it too, like, you know what? I don't like this.
Yeah.
And that's a milestone in itself. as you know, as challenging as it can be. And I think balance is kind of always Balance is kind of always the answer, right?
I know. But, and what you said is a really good point too, with like them starting to assert themselves and say no and say, I don't like it. And something that I want parents to think about is, even if they're saying those words, you can't necessarily assume that that is true, because they might just not want what's in front of them at the moment. They might not be hungry. There could be 100 reasons why they're saying, I don't like it, yucky, gross. And that doesn't mean you have to stop serving those foods. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how do we actually create those healthy habits so that, you know, healthy enough? I understand, you know, what you're saying, and I agree. Like, it's not about what they're doing 100% of the time, because we don't eat. I don't know a single person who eats 100% healthy 100% of the time. And I'm sure, yeah, there are definitely people out there who do it, but that's not everyone. And I don't think that anyone would push that. And I think that most parents, you know, if they look at their own, like food intake, their own like quote unquote diet, that it's not perfect. But how do we create healthy enough habits for children? What exactly do we do?
Part of it, a big part of it, is modeling for them. So I love for parents to be able to model that healthy relationship with food and good habits, and being able to sit with them for meals. It does not have to be the entire family, but even if we can have one adult with a child sitting with them, eating with them, sharing a meal, it doesn't have to be dinner, but being able to partake, because it's a social experience as well. And, you know, there's so many benefits. You look at the research on the benefits of family meals, and they're huge, from their academics and their mental, emotional health, like all of that. So being able to sit with them, I think also, you know, it doesn't have to be a fancy meal, but if we can think about incorporating the different food groups. So I think for me, I have to create some rules for myself around things just to instill those healthy habits. So for example, like if I know they got a treat at lunch because we were wherever, then that's our one treat for the day. Like usually I kind of try and keep it at that. Otherwise it just gets out of control. You go, now it's a little bit easier with people being home more, but I think very easily you can go to school and get something there and then go to a play date and then go wherever. So I try to manage the amount of like treat foods that we're getting. The modeling is huge, especially for any adults who have struggled with dieting and that kind of thing in the past. I think that our kids really pick up on that stuff. And to me, like, I don't, like you said, no one eats 100% healthy all the time. And probably the people who do might have some disordered eating behaviors. Like, it's unnatural to be perfect. Like, it's just not normal. So I think that thinking about, like, am I allowing my child to eat as much as their body needs? That's a huge healthy habit that we can sometimes get in the way of. Am I allowing them to really nourish themselves fully? Am I afraid of what might happen if I allow them to eat more? Like, a lot of these things come up for us. And so it's really interesting how diet culture like really infiltrates the way we feed our kids.
Yeah. And talk a little bit more about that. How does diet culture influence the way that we, you know, feed our kids?
So, you know, I, growing up, was always taught by the media, by women in my life, by others in my life, that you need to be smaller. You need to be thin, to be pretty, to be loved, to have a boyfriend, to be successful. So I think a lot of us still get that message in a lot of places. And then what I see working with parents is that a lot of them have a fear about their child eating too much. They worry about that because we're taught that eating too much is bad and it's going to make us fat, and fat is bad. So I really believe in allowing children to listen to their internal cues, which they have. We're born with them. A baby knows how much milk it needs. Like, its body is really smart, and that continues as they grow. So if we interfere and start putting limits on portions or making comments about them eating too much or liking certain things like bad foods, then that can start messing with how they think about food. And we really want them to be able to determine, am I hungry or am I not? Because even things like clean your plate is overriding those cues.
I'm still suffering from that whole happy plate thing. Yeah. I really do have a hard time not finishing everything. Like my whole thing's like, you can't waste food. Got to eat it all. Like got everything on my plate. Like it is a legit struggle. And I think about it all the time because like, as I've like grown, I know like now, like that's not a healthy habit, but it's still something that is just like, it is something that I just have to just stop that like automatically. Okay, you can save this for later. You can eat it again. Yeah. And I definitely don't succeed all the time. Another thought too, just about children already having this kind of internal, like, you know, like knowledge of like how much, read on how much food they need to eat. And like, that's something that they're also still kind of learning. I saw this firsthand, really working in a school, well, working with my, you know, 3, 4, 5 year olds. And we do something called family style dining, which is pretty much, you know, and it's a work in progress from the beginning of the year to the end of the year because they're still learning it. And generally teachers before me wouldn't practice this, but pretty much it is us putting the bowl of fruit, the bowl of vegetables, the, you know, the protein, the main, pretty much the milk, putting everything out on the table and having the children scoop their own food and choosing their own, you know, their own portions. Now, there's an extent that I, you know, would limit it because sometimes kids just love the process of scooping. And so like, if you let them, they'll literally scoop the whole bowl. So I'm like, okay, like 2 scoops to start off with. And if you want more food, get as much food as you'd like, right? And it was really interesting to see like how much the eating would be different. Like I felt like I could see that they felt the need when I was the one dishing out all the food. They felt one, the need that they had to like eat it all up. And it was almost like, sometimes it almost kind of felt like, you know, for definitely lack of better words, just like ravenous, like kids, like, I'm like, feed me, like, is how it felt. And they would generally, I noticed they would actually eat more, not every kid, but I as a whole, the bowls would be empty more often when I would dish out the food. Cause, and you know, my thought is, or just from kind of observation is that they like, because it's scarce and they don't have it and they don't know if they're going to get it again. When they do get it, it's like, oh, I got to eat it all. I got to eat everything. As opposed to when the bowls are out for them to choose, then the question is, do I want more? And sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes the answer is yes. And even with, I'd say even especially with the like the fruits and the vegetables, like it's so funny because I would, you know, and especially now being not being in one classroom all the time, I get to see how other, you know, teachers and like do things. I get to see a variety because I work with, you know, a bunch of teachers.
Yeah.
And it's just really interesting how, you know, one, they just kind of just like gobble all of the more, I guess, pleasurable foods or whatever you want to call them, like the chicken nuggets or whatever. They gobble that stuff up more. And also with, you know, whenever the teachers would try to force like veggies and fruit on kids, the immediate reaction almost all the time, not all the time, but almost all the time would be like, no, I don't want it. And if they did convince the child by coercing them with and waving a chicken nugget, and you can't have another chicken nugget unless you eat all, you know, your vegetables or you take, you know, then they'd be like, you can't see me for listening to Spotify like a couple weeks from now, but like they take it, they'd be like, they like touch it with their tongue. I ate it. Yeah. Gross.
What you're observing there is something that's really interesting, because I really subscribe to the division of responsibility by Ellen Satter, the division of responsibility in feeding. And what that says is that the child should be in control of what they eat from what's offered and how much. And when we try to interfere with that, when it becomes a pressuring situation, or we're really trying to micromanage the what of what they're eating, the how much of what they're eating, then it becomes a power struggle. And you know how fun it is to be in a power struggle with a 3-year-old.
Man, that it's everyone loses. Everyone loses.
Exactly.
You know, more times than not, like, you know, just not engaging the power struggle, like you said, sitting down, modeling, eating it, talking about the vegetables, and like, not in a way that I'm forcing this child, but I might be like, man, like, yeah, like, wow, you know, Miss Thelma really hooked up these like green beans. This week is really good. Like, I can feel myself getting stronger. And I also talk about giving children reasons that are meaningful for them. So like, another thing that I would pull, but you know, for me, my big thing too is like, you know, don't lie to children, like be as honest as possible. It's very easy to lie to children, and you know, because they trust us, but I don't think that we should take that, you know, trust and abuse it. So like my big thing, even when I'm tempted, like it'd just be so much easier to lie to you right now. It's like, okay, well, how can I, you know, tell the truth, right? How can I even frame it or talk about it in a way that is the truth? And so like, you know, I talk about like when I'm eating the green beans, like, ah, man, I feel like I'm getting stronger. I'm getting faster. And these things are true, right? You eat vegetables, you get healthy. Like it does help your body move more. It does help you build muscle, all that stuff. Like that is true. I mean, you know, and I might exaggerate a little bit. I definitely will exaggerate to children for sure. I will exaggerate the truth and like talk about Spider-Man or Superman. They probably eat their green beans and getting strong and all this stuff. And then as I'm talking about it, as I'm eating it myself, other children around the table start to try. And that's going to kind of go into the question that one of my community members had on the side about like, you know, eating, you know, they eat in other places, but they don't eat, you know, veggies here. And one of the things about childcare is that like, if everyone's eating that thing, then that child's going to be like, maybe it's not so bad. And they may try to, especially if you're eating it as well and you're talking it up and like, ah, okay. And there's not a lot of pressure around it. Then they're like, they'll sneak a bite. And even literally just yesterday, what was it? Was this yesterday or today? I don't know. Was that yesterday or today? I was giving out, I want to say it was green beans. And a child said, now due to COVID, the things are a little different. Like I said, we used to do family style dining, put out all the food out there for them. And then they would scoop it themselves. We can't do that anymore. Like the teacher does all the food and then we just put it on their plate and they have to eat it. So it's a little bit different. I don't like it, but you know, it's the way it's gotta be. And so the child, and the rule is in childcare, you know, per licensing is like, you have to offer the food. That's what the language is. You have to offer it. So with a, you know, 2-year-old or like a one, like who like isn't verbalizing, they can't talk, I kind of have to just put it on there. But for a 4-year-old, can I ask them, you know, do you want green beans or not? And sometimes it's but I asked it, she said no. I gave green beans to everyone else. And 2 minutes later, she asked, well, when I was doing seconds, she was like, can I have some green beans? I'm like, well, sure you can. I gave her green beans and she got seconds on green beans. And I know, especially knowing this child, that if I would have said, you need to eat your green beans, like you need to eat them before you, that would have been a completely different experience for her. And her association with green beans would have been completely different than for future eating purposes. Like, so that's just kind of something that I wanted to share, an experience that I very recently had.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally true. Like we see that in research that there's that positive peer pressure effect with kids with eating. And so many parents will say to me, my kid eats at daycare great. They eat whatever they give them and then they come home and they don't eat it. And it's so much harder, I think, to be in the role of mom because you're so invested in your child's health. and your child's well-being. And so you're like, you want them so badly to eat those healthy foods, and you spent all this time and energy making it. So you want them to eat the thing that you made, but it does. And so it can be really hard to like take a deep breath and be like, I am not emotionally invested in whether you eat that green bean or not, you know?
It's, you have to talk, there's some self-talk you have to do, and then kind of respond to your child. You know, and I think, you know, and that's something that I see, you know, even in the classroom with teachers, because it's like, and sometimes, and I have conversation all the time about like, I love to like do an observation. And before I give any feedback, just like ask like, you know, so why did you do that? What was your thought process? And it's hearing kind of what different people think. And I've learned so much by hearing why people do what they do. I've learned so much to be able to help people. I know a lot of, sometimes teachers are, have that same kind of thing. They're like, man, like if you don't eat, you're going to be cranky. And then like, it's going to make the afternoon rough for me. And then, you know, and then there's also like, sometimes there's pressure because especially nowadays we update everything in the iPad and everything gets sent to the parents. So like how much they eat also gets sent too. And so sometimes there's the pressure of like, oh, well, they're going to question me. Like they, you know, for whatever reason won't feel like I'm competent for whatever. So I find like no matter what it is, we're always telling ourselves these stories, whether it's maybe a lack of our own knowledge and not knowing the research or just anxiety, but we're constantly telling ourselves stories, you know, consciously or subconsciously that aren't true, that is impacting our behavior and how we respond, that is then impacting the way they respond, that then sometimes gets us in these power struggles. And so one of my community members said, my daughter easily gets bored with any food. Maybe she loves spaghetti today. If you make it tomorrow, she'll refuse. She won't touch fruits when she's with me, but in daycare, she loves them. I'm told. Help. She's 18 months.
What are your thoughts? Yeah. So this age is a lot of times when we see that finicky behavior around food and liking something one day and not liking it the next. Like I always joke that as soon as I buy something at Costco, like in the bulk size, my kids decide they don't like it anymore. But some of it is just the age of like them deciding like, I really don't feel like eating this today. So I would say you don't want to give up on giving her a food even if she refuses it sometimes, because that's how we really make picky eating worse, is when we get reactive to, oh, well, they didn't eat that, they don't like it anymore. But that's not necessarily true. And like we were talking about earlier about how in tune they are with their bodies, and for them, like they might just say, I just don't feel like having this today. They're not thinking like, well, this is the food that's available. You know, there's so much more that goes into our mental process about what we're going to eat than them. They're very in the moment with it. So I would say to keep doing what you're doing. And like with the fruits, I would just offer them at home, try to make them fun. Like this is an age where you can start doing that, even just getting a little cookie cutter and making a shape out of a fruit, or making a little smiley face on her plate. Like that was when I started to feel like an entertainer, when my kids hit that toddler age. And I, but you don't have to do a lot of effort just to make it like a little bit more of a fun environment for them.
Yeah. I love, you actually just, when you mentioned entertainer, I don't know if you saw, this is kind of an aside, but I don't know if you saw I want to say it was a TikTok, or maybe it's, I don't know if it's Instagram or TikTok, but it was it's like a dad who does like these gourmet like little meals, and they're not really gourmet, but he like suits them up, and he's like a little, he's like a waiter, and he's like, hey, you're having, you know, peas and carrots with the finest. And it's just really, I don't know if anyone's ever saw that, but I think that's really a fun way to do that. And I actually like to do that too when I'm serving food. I like to kind of play around and get into character too, just so it's a fun experience. And then You know, because especially because, you know, children learn with like association. So if they associate, you know, a food with a positive experience, they're going to be more likely to want to have that food more often. I mean, another thing that I would suggest for anyone who does is able to, it's maybe not the month for it right now, but gardening is a great way to get children into food that they may not otherwise try, because they put in like the work of, you know, of gardening it, of growing it, and just that exciting moment. Like it actually, like there was food that grew from the seed. Like that excitement will a lot of times lead them to try something that they wouldn't normally try. So that's something
for sure. And I think just having the long-term mindset versus like, can I get them to eat this today? I try to avoid that thinking and think more about, can I cultivate them into a child who's interested in new foods and will try things down the road, but having those good experiences now. So even just getting them in the kitchen with you, like I would have my kids scoop beans into another container or just put the broccoli onto the tray, like simple little things where there's no pressure on them to eat it, but they're able to have that good positive experience. That goes a long way.
Yeah. And that's a big thing about what I talk about just in general. And in this, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, discipline or cleaning up or, you know, healthy habits or just creating that culture around, you know, healthy habits is, you know, how you really make the impact long term. And so I love what you said. And even just, you know, the goal isn't for them to eat that vegetable, that piece of broccoli on, you know, December 22nd. The goal is, you know, long-term goal is to, you know, raise a child who is knows how to eat and cook healthy and also wants to, is invested and values, you know, healthy eating. And that's a completely different way to approach it. That's when you look at it that way, when you're in those power struggle moments and you're trying to force feed them that food, it starts to feel a little silly because you start to realize this may be counterproductive to the long-term goal.
Absolutely. And so it's interesting, over 70% of adults who were forced to eat certain foods as children do not eat them as adults. So, you know, we might win in that moment, but we lose in that long game.
Right. So you said over 70%.
I think it's like 72% in a study that was done.
Wow. That is so, yeah, just so pretty much. So let's break it down. Let's make it like super simple. And this is kind of what I'm hearing. You tell me what I'm missing. And I know that there's more, you know, like practical things to do, but pretty much in the most simplest way, cook the food, model healthy eating habits, offer it to them. Don't stress it out. Don't stress about it if they don't want to eat it that day.
Yes.
Make the experience fun. Make them a part of it. And that's kind of how you create those healthy habits long term.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Like we don't need to talk about what foods are good and what foods are bad. That usually just sets it up for them thinking, well, I'm bad if I like this food, or like, we don't want them to have those thoughts about food, but really just being able to prepare good foods most of the time and having them be part of it, have it be low pressure, and knowing that usually most kids, their nutrient intake will balance out over a couple days. So sometimes parents are like, well, I can't really like sit back because all they're eating is carbs. But usually if you give them like 3 days, they will balance that out, as long as you're giving them opportunities to have other food. You're not only serving carbs. So we can usually like relax a little bit. And even just the amount, like knowing, if I firmly encourage parents to have a set schedule of meals and snacks, not like rigid, but just a regular routine, so that your child is having those opportunities. Oh, it froze. And
we're back though.
Okay.
So what you're saying about the 3 days is that if they are eating, because I think in the first question, they are just eating, you know, saltines and animal crackers and goldfish, that as long as you continue to offer those fruits and those vegetables, that they will choose, they will likely end up choosing those things anyways over the course of a few days.
Yes. Yes. And there are rare cases, like there are some people I work with who have extreme picky eaters who will not eat a single fruit or vegetable or that kind of thing. But that's more rare to have that kind of thing happen. But being able to give them the good variety and have them on a schedule where they're not grazing throughout the day. If they get into the grazing habit, then usually their diet goes down. Like they're just not getting really hungry, and then they're just kind of like they want snacky food. So having the schedule of the 3 meals and 1 or 2 snacks for a young kid is like what works the best.
Yeah, and that's exactly how we have it set up in a school environment. What about textures, right? What about children, and how do you know that it's, so how do you discern the difference between maybe the child doesn't like the texture versus the child doesn't like the taste versus, I'm just not feeling the peas today? How do you kind of discern? What are some things that you look for to?
Yeah, that can be hard for parents to kind of suss out. And I usually, when I work with my picky eater parents, is I'll have them fill out a safe foods sheet, the first thing that they do. And you can get this on my website. I have, if you go to like where to start with a picky eater, I have a free download, and you can fill out this page where it separates the proteins, the produce, like fruits and vegetables, dairy, different food groups. And you can look and see, is there a common thread here? Are they only eating soft, mushy things? Are they only eating crunchy things? I see that a lot, like kids who only like crunchy. Are they only eating cold foods? So there can become these quirks in their preferences. And a lot of times when it does become like a very clear texture issue, then you might talk to a feeding therapist, an occupational therapist, or an SLP who specializes in that, because they can help. If you're like really stuck, I always say, do not hesitate to talk to your pediatrician and say, I'm really stuck with this. Like, don't let it go on for years of just like putting up with it. If you're struggling, talk to them and find somebody who can help your own unique situation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so I'm gonna have one last question, but knowing me, it's not one last question. And I'm gonna also allow Catherine to grab a spot so that she can ask the question in real life and real time. But what are your thoughts on the infamous no thank you bite? I've also heard it called the polite bite, but in my space, I typically hear it called the no thank you bite. Take a no thank you bite. What are your thoughts on it?
Okay, so for some really easygoing kids, it's not going to be a big deal. There's going to be people who say, oh, it, like we did that and it was fine and it got them to eat more. But in most cases, any sort of pressure or forcing a child to eat something is not going to lead to them eating more of it and learning to like it. Like we were talking about this whole time with setting up those long-term habits. And so I just don't feel that it accomplishes the goal that you want. And I don't mind you describing a food, telling them, about the characteristics of the food. This is crunchy, like a pretzel, and it tastes salty, and giving them like opportunities to learn about the food and maybe even touch it. But for picky eaters, there is this kind of hierarchy in what they're able to tolerate. And for a lot of kids, making themselves put something in their mouth that they're really not ready to is hard for them, and it doesn't feel good. And so if this becomes a thing where then they're dreading like that part of the mealtime, or they're dreading mealtimes in general, now we find ourselves with a much bigger problem.
Yeah.
So like,
the problem worse.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't like it. I don't find that it helps. So I'm kind of like, just don't even do it. And the nutrition, like the nutrition that they're getting in that one bite is basically non-existent. So it's like just by getting them to have
it's
that.
Not even worth it. And you know, something, way that I like to describe it, when I talk to people and like, you know, when they want to do the new thing, like imagine if like, you know, someone offered you like, or you're like at a place and before you could eat, you know, what you really wanted to eat, they're like, you got to eat. Got to taste some squid first, taste some, you know, bull testicles, like, you know, like, and there are a lot of places where people eat it very normal and it's very normal food. Right. And, you know, like maybe it's a delicacy to eat, you know, snail escargot. I've tried escargot before. It's actually pretty good. But you know, I ate it on my own terms, right? Yes. I ate it. You know, no one forced me to eat it. And I just, you know, usually when I frame it that way, we're like, ew, like if someone did, like imagine for them, they're looking at it like that Fear Factor stuff. Like, I know Fear Factor doesn't come on anymore, but like,
yes,
for those like, you know, like back in the day, like that's the way that they are maybe experiencing it. And now we're forcing them to eat it and it's just not helpful. And I've heard some pretty like, really bad stories about, you know, children who have reactions. Children, I've, you know, heard of children act literally throwing up.
Yeah.
You know, thank you, bye. You know, I've heard a story of, turns out like the child was actually allergic to this thing that they, you know, and we didn't know and they didn't know.
Yeah. But,
you know, and so it's just not something that I am in like support of either, but it's just in the, you know, childcare profession, it is just so much in our culture.
Yeah, well, people don't know. I mean, they don't, if they knew that this was often the effect, I don't think they would do it. But for the child, the fear is very real. The threat, we know the threat is not real, right? But to them, the fear is real. It's the same for a lot of kids. It is a form of anxiety. And so I think when we can understand how it feels for them, it's like, I'll say, you know, if someone said to me like, hey, Casey, we're going to go skydiving right now. Let's do it. I'd be like, wait a minute. I'm not really comfortable with that yet. Like, can we talk about this first? Can I get a little more comfortable? Can I watch somebody do it? Like, I think for us, we think, oh, what's the big deal? Just put it in your mouth. But it is a big deal to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. I love it. The fear is real, even though we know the threat is not. Catherine, you can go ahead and grab a spot. I'm just going to say that one more time. The fear is real, even if we know the threat is not. And that us knowing that the threat is not real doesn't take anything away from their fear. And so I just had to say that three times. Catherine, welcome, welcome, welcome. You're on with Casey Barnes, and you can ask your question.
How are you? Okay, so I'm sitting here listening, and all this is great information, so I'm trying to narrow down really what my question is. But I feel like I'm struggling the most. I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. I'm struggling the most with actually getting them to stay at the table to even start eating or to eat more than one bite. And like my 2-year-old wants to sit on my lap and have me feed her. But I'm also trying to like incorporate boundaries, because if it was up to her, I would do everything for her. So I, you know, during the meal, try to tell her, you know, mommy's eating, you can't sit on my lap right now, but later you can. And so then when I'm done eating and she's played the whole time and we've encouraged her to come back to the table, you know, so she wasn't sitting there for any of the meal, then she'll come and sit on my lap and then she'll eat some, but not a lot. And then she gets up and then it's 2 seconds later that she wants a snack and she wants, you know, all of these things. And she just asked me, I had to come out to my car so I could actually talk and not be interrupted. But she asked me, it's 7:30 and it's, you know, we brushed teeth and we're doing bed. And she's like, can I have some carrots? And I'm like, do I say yes? Because it's carrots? Do I say no because it's bedtime? I feel bad because she's hungry, but I don't know. I'm struggling with that.
I can address the bedtime snack kind of portion of it. And then I think, Mr. Chaz, you probably have some good tips about the behavior related to the mealtime. So with the bedtime, usually with kids, I would say that if there's more than, say, an hour and a half or so before dinner and bedtime, that I would just, if this is like, if it's common that dinner is more of a struggle, I would go ahead and put a bedtime snack into the routine. That way, you know, they have this other opportunity to eat, and it doesn't have to, it's not like ice cream, you know, it's just another snack for them to get some nutrition in before bed. And that way you're kind of like, well, if they are actually hungry, they have this opportunity. But the mealtime behavior, I'm going to pass over you, Mr. Chad.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you were saying, I just want to make sure I have it right, because I was reading some of the questions on the side. You're saying that you have a two-year-old who is sitting, who sits on your lap, and then you have another child of what age?
She's four.
A four-year-old who is kind of getting up from eating?
She sits mostly, but I mean, after hearing some of the things you guys have said, I don't even want to say how I get her to sit. It's mostly like two more bites, you know, like, if you get up, if you keep getting up from dinner, we're not going to have dessert. I'm going to work on that. But so mostly she sits, but my two-year-old will not sit. She won't sit there. And if I don't let her sit on my lap and I don't physically like feed her, which she enjoys, I'm not like forcing her, but then she just won't eat at all. Like she'll just eat nothing.
And that's for every mealtime?
Yeah, almost. Until she's very hungry. She's also nursing, and we're trying so hard to wean that it's not even funny. But I feel like she's nursing all day because she won't eat, and she nurses all night because she won't eat. And we do the, like, you know, if you don't want it, you kiss it goodbye, which kind of sounds like the no thank you bite. And we have a no thank you plate, like all these things that we tried to do to like just encourage them to even be sitting. We put food that they don't want. If they don't want it, they can put a piece of it on the plate, and then we all talk about it. Like, oh, I see it's green. Like, I think it smells like this. I got her to eat a piece of broccoli today, but she was sitting on my lap, and I had to be, you know, feeding it to her. I have to do that for every meal to get her to eat anything.
So a couple things. One thing, too, that a lot of people, you know, wouldn't necessarily expect, and, you know, a lot of, you know, houses aren't necessarily built this way, or we don't really think about it in terms of the table and the food experience, is that when the child like is sitting on a tall chair, I don't know if this is the case, but they're sitting on a tall chair, it makes it a lot easier. They're kind of wiggling up. They're not really centered. They're not really grounded. So them getting up and moving around is going to be more likely one. So if possible, having, you know, maybe it's a small table with a small chair that's still there so that she does stay there. She does feel a little more grounded, but still close to you, so you can have conversations and talk, and maybe she can even scoop more food if possible. Even having, I like the idea, if, you know, if it may not be possible, but if this is something you're really struggling with, having some other servings that she can, when she's done with her food, she can herself, your four-year-old can scoop her like seconds herself. And so that she can kind of choose, and that might actually kind of bring like, ooh, like I want to eat because I like scooping, because that's just a fun activity for scooping in itself. Just the process of scooping their own food in itself is a fun activity. Now, but I would say on top of, you know, her being grounded and, you know, kind of feet on the floor, you guys talking and having a conversation. The other thing in terms of her getting up, of kind of setting the boundary piece of it, is that if you're getting up from the table, then, you know, that's saying that you're done. So like, don't get up until you're done eating. You know, eat your food while you're here. You can stay here for, you know, X amount of time, for as long as you want, unless you do have to let her know ahead of time if you do have something to do in 30 minutes. Hey, we're gonna do X, Y, and Z. But let her be there and say, hey, when you get up, that's, you know, telling me you're done. And it's gonna be some reminders, because kids may get distracted. Maybe the other question I would ask is like, what is she getting up to do? Is she getting up to, is there like a TV in the background that she's distracted by? She's getting up to look at the TV. Like, what is she getting up to do?
Today when she got up, she gets up and she goes into my living room and she grabs toys. She grabs like this little block that has shapes on it. And she's trying to like engage us into this game where we roll the block and say what shape it is. And so she's yelling, sis, what shape, you know, to everybody who's sitting at the table. And I feel like conflicted with, like, is her attention span big enough to sit at the table? Should I let her come and go? Or should I be like, you know, it's dinner time, you have to sit? Like,
I would suggest eating, like, it's, you know, this is dinner time. This is the time we sit and eat. When you're done, you can do the game. You know, we can play the game with you. Like, when we're all done eating, we'll come over, we'll play the game. And even in terms of, like, if that's something that she really likes to do and something, again, that you can build into routine, just like Casey mentioned with, like, the snacking, so she knows it's coming and it's not something that, like, like, I have to get it now. Like, and it's the routine. She knows that, like, she's every day, like, if she so chooses, like, there's this period of time where she can go and do that dice game. But when you get up, you're done eating, and we're throwing our food away, and she may need reminders. You know, I would say that the average four-year-old, I never like to make blanket statements about every four-year-old, because every child, every human is different and developmentally in different places. But I would say for the average four-year-old that they're able to sit down and
well, this is my two-year-old. So my four-year-old sits. My two-year-old wants to sit on my lap and have me feed her and goes and plays a game. And so it's her. So my four-year-old mostly, she sits and she eats certain things and picks around. And she's good if I say, you know, try two bites of this. She'll do that. But it's my two-year-old that won't sit and eat and would nurse instead. And
Catherine, I do have on my, if you go to mamanosnutrition.com, I have a free guide on my homepage. You just scroll down for getting kids to sit at the table longer, because this is such a frequent question that I get. But I think something that also helps, and I think Mr. Chaz has like an Instagram reel or something about this, but transitions, sometimes putting more effort into the transition to the mealtime, kind of like signaling that this is the mealtime, this is when we sit together as a family, and setting those expectations up front, and then encouraging her while she's sitting in her chair. I love seeing you sit in your chair. This way I can see you and talk to you, like, but setting the stage for what you want, and it's not going to be perfect, but I think that will help too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I agree. Letting her know too, like, because she, her whole life, she's used to being in your lap, like connected to you while she's eating. And so that is a big change for her to be sitting in this chair. Like, you are her chair, right? And right. So to be sitting in this chair, and sometimes too, for a two-year-old, like, the two-year-olds sitting in, like, that's a skill for them to learn, you know, toddlers and twos, like, so that might be even challenging for her to do comfortably. So letting her know ahead of time that this is something that's going to be happening now, that she can sit right next to mommy, and maybe even transitioning, maybe you're even like, you know, you've got your hand on her back, so she still feels like that comfort. She still feels that, like, you are there. And just still that oxytocin will still be coursing through her veins because you're still physically touching her with the hand on her back might help ease that transition, but definitely let her know ahead of time that that's what you're going to start doing now.
Right.
And then,
do you think I should, like, take the plate after?
Like, no, for a two-year-old.
Over up or
for a two-year-old, redirect her back, and also too, like, can she verbally tell her, like, tell you when she's done, or do you guys have any signs?
Yeah, oh, yep. They both do sign language. They started baby sign really young, but she speaks really well. I mean, okay. She speaks in sentences to me, and she'll tell me, you know, me don't want that, mommy. Me, I'll do it.
Okay.
Or whatever. But.
And just make sure that you're not, like, she's not full, and you're, like, pushing her back to eat more, and she's already, like, I'm actually up because I'm done with my food. And I'm no longer hungry, as opposed to, like, I just got distracted by this thing. And usually when you, like, kind of redirect them, like, they'll generally tell you that, like, and you might ask them, hey, are you done? Are you all done? Can you throw the plate away? And I, too, just to make sure, because, you know, two-year-old and toddlers with decisions, sometimes they make a decision 1 second and it's like, wait, but I wanted that. And so try to, like, help her, like, know that, like, this is a decision we're making. Like, let's throw the plate away together. Let's empty out the plate, whatever it is. have her be a part of that emptying of the plate process and make that a part of the routine too. So that that's even more of a clear sign of communication between you two that she's done. She no longer wants any more food and she's ready to move on to the next thing and roll the dice.
And so like definitely no more like sitting on my lap and me feeding her. Because I struggle, like, is it better that she eats or is it better that she thinks I'm going to feed her at every, or is it worse if she thinks I'm going to feed her for every meal? You know what I mean?
What I would say is that let her know ahead of time, make the transition. And with the first time that you do something new, it may not, like, it may be really hard for her, really, maybe really tough for her. And just, you know, maybe the first time you might have to try to do something in between. And that's why I said, like, the hand on the back. Try to maybe the first day she's not sitting in a chair all by herself, scooping her own food, eating by herself, but maybe day by day you can take steps. And maybe it's not even day by day, maybe it's week by week. You're taking steps, just really gauging kind of where her comfort level is too, and just letting her know she might need, and you understanding that she might need that this is genuinely a hard, difficult transition for her. So she might need a little bit of comforting in the meantime, like as she's getting used to sitting in the chair by herself and starting to feed herself.
And kids often will eat more when you're feeding them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they need that amount. A lot of times with toddlers, I see that their appetite kind of starts bigger in the morning and then it naturally tapers off throughout the day. So even if she's not eating a big amount, like you can kind of gauge whether she needs some of your assistance, whether she wants your attention, but encouraging her to start feeding herself, you giving her attention for doing that so she knows you're still going to be interested in her and caring about her at the meal. But I would say not to stress too much about the amount, especially if, you know, you're following up with her. Are you sure you're done? And then having this bedtime snack opportunity, potentially, if that's what you decide to do. And so being able to step back a little bit and have her take on a little bit more responsibility there.
Right. Okay.
I know it's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
I get anxious about it though. Like today, so I try to put very little on her plate so it doesn't look overwhelming. So today I gave her 5 like rigatoni noodles cut in half, 1 like mini meatball cut in half, and 1 thing of broccoli. And like she chewed her meatball and spit it out, got down and ran away. And like she would not come back to it at all. She would choose to nurse to fill up like literally for the entire day, except for snacks that I'll give her, which she'll eat like carrots or graham crackers.
So you feel like you're having trouble transitioning more towards solids and away from nursing.
Right. I feel like she just knows that like she doesn't have to eat that because she'll get full later anyways. You know what I mean? Unless I'm feeding her, which she'll nurse less if I let her sit on my lap and I feed her. So like I'm going to try all the things. It's just scary to be like, you know, let her just eat whatever she wants because I'm like, well, that's nothing.
She will adapt too. Like if you decide, okay, I'm going to cut out maybe my daytime nursing sessions or something like that, like midday, her body will need to make up those calories. So even if like there's a day that's a tough transition of her maybe not getting enough to eat that one day. And I know that's hard as a mom, even just for one day for her not to get what she needs. But when you're like, okay, I'm ready. I really want her to be done nursing. And I know this is hard for her, but I'm going to tell her that this is what we're doing. You can make those boundaries around how you do that. But usually they naturally will eat more when they are nursing less, but it is tricky to get there. So my heart goes out to you. I know it's tough.
Thank you.
And remember my, like, I feel like my catchphrase or almost or like my tagline is just like, you know, it's about improvement. Like it's not about being perfect every day. Don't be a perfectionist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve every day. So, you know, just,
right,
work on and celebrate those small wins, right? Celebrate, you know, And celebrate with her too. If, you know, she's sitting next to you and she's starting to like feed her, even if she's just sitting next to you, right? And you're feeding her, still celebrate it because, you know, we're progressing.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely. Hopefully it all works out.
You can do it.
Yeah. Keep me in the loop. Message me and let me know how it goes. Also, too, for those that know, we're doing, this is like Nutrition Week. So I'm actually having another session on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So if you'd like, we can jump on and have more conversation. You can kind of tell me how the last few days have gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can talk more.
Okay, great.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
I got one last question, Casey. You up for it? It's on the side.
Do it.
So the question is about allowing our kid to choose what they eat from the food that we present. She said, love this, by the way. It takes a lot of pressure off of us parents. If a child would finish all of a side, say macaroni, and then ask for more, and they haven't touched other food, what would be your next step? If you have to, and that's pretty much the question, which is great. And I actually did want to ask about like seconds and, you know, what, you know, your thoughts and approach, but this is I love Vanessa that she asked this question. So question specifically.
I have a blog post on this topic, like what to do if they only want to eat one food at a meal. So anyone who wants more reading on it can go there. But in general, I allow them to have more of that food. Like if you're serving whatever you put on the table at the meal, you're communicating to your child. You don't have to actually say this, but the message they're receiving is this food is okay. I'm allowed to eat this. This food is here. This is what the meal is. So I think we get nervous when it's like the French fries or the mac and cheese and that they want more of, because we're thinking, well, that's not as nutritious as this other stuff. Should I give them more or what should I do? If there is more that's available, I do say go ahead and give them more of that. If it's like there's four rolls at the table, there's four adult or four people, mm-hmm. then no, you're not gonna give up all the other rolls to your toddler who's asking for it. But if it's available, then, and you know, it's not going to cause like GI issues. Sometimes with fruit, especially if they have too much fruit, we see a little diarrhea action. So you can put a stop there. But I think that it's normal for them to want some more of the food. And my advice is go ahead and let them have more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Let me piggyback off of that. You said that this, you know, it, you know, French fries, or you know, let's say like chicken nuggets is a popular one. Maybe they just want. Let's not even say snacks, but you know, where is. You know, what if they just want chicken nuggets? So, okay, I'm just eating the chicken nuggets. That's all I'm having. And then the next day it's, you know, I just want the French fries. That's all I'm having. And from what you said earlier, what you would expect is that at some point, I guess, you know, quote unquote, typical child would choose, you know, a fruit or vegetable if it's offered. Is there any thoughts about like, what about like variety of fruit? Like what if you're offering the same, like can you talk a little bit more about that? Like what if it's just, what if they're not, what if it's day four and they're still just eating the chicken nuggets and the macaroni and the French fries, and that's the only three things that they will touch, and it's day four and day five. And maybe we're not at the point where we're going to talk to our pediatrician, but what are some other things that we can kind of just try initially?
So you have control over the menu. You don't have control over what they choose at the meal. But if we see where, you know, one time, one opportunity can be snack time. Like if we're seeing at meals, they're really never going for the fruit or veggie, then at snack time, maybe only offer fruit and maybe a yogurt dip or something to go with it. But having that opportunity to do that. You can always do smoothies. That's an amazing way to get those fruits and veggies in that most kids will like, even if they're like having trouble with the texture of fruits. Dried fruit counts too. So like raisins, those count as a fruit. Freeze-dried fruits are crunchy. A lot of kids will go for those. They don't have any sugar added. They still have the same nutrition. So that one works really well. But so like you don't have to give them their favorite foods at every meal. And I encourage you not to. like, you know, maybe tonight is chicken nuggets, but then tomorrow you make salmon and they don't eat any and they just have the rice. Like, that's fine. But I don't want you to cater to them nutritionally. We want to offer variety. And from like being a decent human being, we want them to know they're not going to get their favorite served to them every single day. They're in for a rude awakening when they get older if they always have that.
Especially if they don't know how to cook. Yes. Well, thank you so much. I loved the conversation. I loved everything you had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chad. I could talk to you for hours.
Oh, man. Don't say it because people have been on here before. I'm going to stop the broadcast right now. But.
Yeah. What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?